belting. Yeah, right, that's we're away.
Yeah.
Okay, let's give this a go. Pretend I'm sat next to you. As horrible as that sounds, hang on, I'll do our little intro. Hello everyone, and welcome to Dark Natter, the podcast where we slowly unscrew a piece of dark fiction to see what unspeakable horrors emerge. I'm John Richter.
And I'm Liam Martin.
And today is our first ever attempt at trying to do this remotely because of coronavirus. There you go. This is a big change. Weird, innit?
History being made.
Absolutely. We are living in unprecedented times.
How are you getting on?
Well, everyone keeps saying that maybe, you know, silver linings emerging from clouds. This is obviously a terrible outbreak. Lots of people at risk. Bad times. But that there could be some positives that emerge, like it encourages people to work from home more and encourages companies to be more lenient about that. And, you know, and other things like pollution levels, you know, carbon emissions are really far down. But yeah, I kind of think maybe we could get used to this, couldn't we, just working from home all the time?
No, I'm just really bored, to be honest with you.
See, that must mean you're really social then, normally.
Yeah, I didn't think I was, but...
I'll be honest, I'm surprised about that.
Like, I'm very surprised.
What were you doing before?
Stalking, mainly.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's made the serial killing business much harder.
Has nosedived. You're not allowed to go near anyone. Yeah, it is really weird. Oh, hey, you coughed then.
I did. I have actually been told to self-isolate. I phoned 111.
Oh, really?
And yeah, so before we were kind of legally obliged to self-isolate, I was actually given the advice to anyway. Yeah, I've had a cough for about a week now. So.
And when was your conversation with 111?
Just earlier, a couple of days ago. Now, I feel fine. I don't think it is coronavirus, but they're obviously being really cautious at the moment, especially because my partner works for the NHS. So,
oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, that would be a catastrophe if she caught something and passed it on. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think just being overly cautious, but, you know.
Yeah, got to take precautions to
got
protect
to, yeah.
everyone else. It's such is the life we now lead.
I mean, this is, if this was fiction, it would be dark fiction, but it's not.
Correct.
It's reality.
So it doesn't qualify.
We
can't put the coronavirus in the Hall of Pain.
No. But it would bloody get in there, I'll tell you, and it'd cause havoc.
It'd be a good plot, that. I might write that as as like fan fiction. What would happen if Stephen King was holed up with salad fingers in a plague
coronavirus
situation? But yeah, just weird, very, I mean, it feels like it's sort of deteriorated really rapidly.
Yeah.
Like only a couple of weeks ago, I was like out doing an event, half marathon.
Yeah.
And now, you know, it's changed kind of very, very fast. Although we are still allowed to go out running as long as you're on your own and you kind of dodge everyone. It's a bit like a video game. You've got to stay 2 meters wide.
It's very, very strange, isn't it?
I had a good, at the end of said run, I went for a run early today, nipped into the shop to do me one trip to the shop for the, trying to keep it as low as possible, not go in there all the time. So trying to just keep on top of everything. And the toilet roll shelves were newly stocked.
Wow. That's the rarity in these times.
For a minute, I thought it was like a mirage, you know, like someone who's lost in the desert and just hallucinating bog roll. But it was real. I could touch it.
Who would have thought, toilet paper would have been the currency of coronavirus?
People are wiping their asses on old money. But
just get out in the garden and spray the hose pipe on it. That's what I say. Just bend over and get sprayed.
Like a low-budget B-Day.
Yeah, basically.
Do you... I assume you're doing the hose pipe yourself. You're not expecting someone else to do that, to provide that service for you.
Well, my partner's home, so...
I suppose you'd have to do it from 2 metres away.
That's true.
Which would require a lot of precision. This is an image I didn't want, Liam. Nobody wanted. And now that's it. It's embedded in the mind of the
and
nation.
And this podcast isn't about coronavirus, as we've well established. So maybe I should stop going on about shooting water at my ass and start talking about what we're here to talk about. Which is?
Well, there is a segue. So before
there is, yeah.
the viral outbreak, we had already decided our next show was going to be a particular piece of dystopian fiction set in London. So it's kind of appropriate.
Very appropriate.
It's my go for pitch to you, as we say. So to clarify for any first-time listeners who haven't already turned off by now after that image of you getting anyway, we alternate, one of us pitching to t'other a particular piece of dark fiction that we believe is worthy of a place in the hallowed hallways of the Hall of Pain. Very glad to hear that your laugh worked remotely. That was pleasing.
So this week, yeah, as you said, it's your turn to pitch to t'other, which is me.
We're going to do Jeff Wayne's musical version of War of the Worlds. So not, obviously we'll touch on it, but not the original book, not the infamous Orson Welles radio production, but very specifically, as you'll have guessed from the opening music that I'm going to add on, it is the Jeff Wayne musical version of War of the Worlds. I'll dive straight in then and explain what it is. The War of the Worlds was a novel written by H.G. Wells in 1898, which to me is bonkers to imagine an influential piece of science fiction came out in blooming Victorian times before the 20th century.
I find that with a lot of science fiction, actually, that obviously horror has been around for donkers of years, but sci-fi, like, what imagination you must have to come up with, because sci-fi I always think is kind of more technology based, and
yeah, totally, like the real visionaries, they were thinking outside of a much smaller box. So it almost makes you think anyone who's writing sci-fi stuff these days is kind of got the luxury of another century's worth of progress to inspire them.
So
amazing. And I know he comes up a lot on this podcast because he permeates popular horror culture, I guess, but I wonder whether H.P. Lovecraft was massively influenced by that novel, because there's certainly, as we'll get onto, slobbery tentacle monsters in it, otherworldly horror, horror from outside the realms of the earth that's not just grounded in ghosts and spirits. So, I sometimes wonder if H.G. Wells is a big influence on some of Lovecraft's work.
Quite possibly, yeah.
I feel like that doesn't get talked about much.
No, it doesn't. I think H.P. Lovecraft is such a sort of iconic figure now that he doesn't really get banded in with anyone else. He's kind of always seen as the forefather of all this stuff. But yeah, you know, he would have been influenced by other people. And yeah.
Yeah, it just almost feels like Lovecraft is heralded as this kind of completely visionary.
Yeah.
He came up with all this cosmic horror stuff himself single-handedly. And then you kind of read this book and you're like, oh, well, H.G. Wells was doing tentacle monsters from other planets 30 years previously. So interesting. So yeah, novel came out. So there's a very famous adaptation, an Orson Welles radio drama adaptation of The War of the Worlds that came out originally in 1938. And this is one that's often cited as like a really good example of I don't know if it was intended as a hoax, a little bit like Ghost Watch that we covered on a previous episode, that infamous BBC drama. It was a work of fiction, but its presentation was very realistic, and it had an entire nation in uproar, thinking that it was real and Martians were landing and we were under attack from another planet.
We did mention it, didn't we, during the Ghost Watch episode?
We did. I wonder if I could... I might splice in a little clip from it if I can find anything online.
We now return you to Carl Phillips at Grover's Mill.
Ladies and gentlemen... Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmer's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see. The more state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain's conferring with someone. Can't quite see who. Oh, yes, I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. Now they've parted, and the professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. If those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute. Something's happening. humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror, and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Now the whole field's caught up by the woods, the bars, the gas tanks for the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission. However, we will return to that point at the earliest opportunity. In the meantime, we have a late bulletin from San Diego, California. Professor Indelkoffer, speaking at a dinner of the California Astronomical Society, expressed the opinion that the explosions on Mars are undoubtedly nothing more than severe volcanic disturbances on the surface of the planet. We continue now with our piano interlude.
So it's sort of very famous, well-known radio adaptation. And then in 1978, you got the Jeff Wayne musical.
Yes.
Which has spawned some of the, well, I say some of these famous songs. There's only one really famous one, isn't there? Which is The Chances of Anything Coming from Mars. That one. But it is a good one.
It is a good one, yeah.
And it's that version I want to focus on. There have been some movie adaptations over the years. I think there's a 1950-odd one that I quite enjoyed. The one that's got like, it's got that scene where there's a almost like a searching camera eyeball thing,
yeah,
on a big slithering metal that comes into a room searching for them. And that's not, that doesn't really happen in the book. So that was, that's noteworthy. And then there was that crappy Tom Cruise version of it. Do you remember that one?
Hey, I'll be honest, I didn't mind it. I thought it was okay. It was okay. It wasn't great, but it was a, you know, it was fine, I thought.
I remember not liking the, so two things that it did, just to quickly cover that one off. One was that it had some bollocks about the Martians were travelling down on the lightning.
Yes.
Into the ground. Like, why did he put that in it? I don't understand. Not that Tom Cruise wrote it all by himself, but I'm blaming him. And then the second thing was, sometimes it frustrates me when people do a movie adaptation of a book. The book is old and set at its time, in this case, turn of the end of the 19th century. But they set the movie in the present day.
Yeah.
And it's like, we've got enough like alien invasion movies set in the present day. We've got bloody Independence Day and all that shite.
I guess it's difficult because you kind of want to make it more relevant to your audience. But I think I agree. I think it loses a lot when you do that. Because it's, I like it when you're having to use your imagination a bit more. And, you know, we weren't around during this time. And just thinking, I don't know. I can totally see why they do that. But it certainly doesn't benefit most films.
No, I agreed. I see why they do it. They do it because they are worried they'll alienate people in their audience who go, oh, this is stupid. It's set in the past. It's very, very good. You're still on top form, even remotely. That's encouraging, even despite being on at death's door and, you know, trapped at home, half demented because you haven't been able to murder anyone. You're still coughing up top quality puns.
Hey, I salute you. That was a good one in itself. Yeah, well done.
Yes, it was unintentional, though.
There you go. There's one for you.
Hey! I've lost my train of thought, soz.
Time.
So I get why they do it. It's because they think they'll alienate members of their audience and put people off. But all they end up doing is therefore making loads of movies that are all the same. So surely
it'd
be nice if somebody was brave enough to say, oh no, I'm going to adapt the original source material and set it at the end of the 19th century, because that'll be interesting because no one's ever done it before. But
yeah, totally. And it, yeah, surely it would be better, because like I said, you have to kind of use your imagination. So it's easy for us because we can kind of, we've been so kind of inundated with this kind of sci-fi stuff that we can imagine this kind of thing happening. As unreal and, you know, far out as it is, we could kind of imagine there being life on other planets and technology and, you know, all this stuff.
Yeah.
But seeing people from a completely different era dealing with something like that, surely that would be scarier as well, because it's so alien, dare I say, to them. That Yeah, I don't know. It's an odd one, yeah. That's kind of part of the fear, isn't it? That it would have been so completely unknown. Not to say that any alien invasion, if one happened now, wouldn't be. But, yeah, I don't know. It just loses something.
Yeah, in other words, it would be an interesting film to watch if somebody would be sort of brave enough to tackle it.
The one thing I liked about it, though, I did quite like the sound effects. The sort of like horn.
Yeah, they changed the noise they made from the one in the musical, which we'll get to. But I agree that the noise they came up with was quite cool and scary.
Yeah. But apart from that, it was fine. I thought it was fine. But
yeah, it wasn't. There are lots of worse films, and it probably would be an interesting entry point into the War of the Worlds franchise, but I think the best iteration is the musical, but to get into that, so 1978, Jeff Wayne created this musical version, which you can buy as an album. It's like a double disc, double disc vinyl when it first was released, and you can now get that as a double disc kind of CD, and I'm sure you can buy it.
A couple of hours long, isn't it?
Yeah, so it wouldn't fit on one disc kind of thing. So it's very clearly like, an A, side A and a side B. And my parents had this on vinyl. So I listened to it, yet again, when I was miles too young. I don't know, I was about eight or something. And I remember being really, really scared of it, but also thinking it was really cool.
Yeah, right. See, my experience with it, I remember listening to it. I borrowed it, double disc CD, and I actually had one of those triple CD players that would automatically revolve to the next disc once you finished. But I would have been
shabby ones with like lights all over it. And,
no, it didn't have lights on it, but it was it was handy though, because you could just load it up with three CDs and you wouldn't have to keep changing. And I remember this was during a time, late teens when. Yeah, I used to partake in the odd bit of recreational
music.
Let's just say I used to listen to it whilst.
Let's just say you used to smoke loads of weed.
Yeah, and I remember listening to it then, and I probably just started wanking halfway through, like I always would have at that age.
So that was no change. But, and that's how you consume horror media now, though. What's the difference?
Yeah. Yeah, and then obviously, and then after that, I just listened to it again recently. So I never really had the fear factor for me. It never had the fear factor to me, but I did think it was very well done and I enjoyed it.
It's interesting. I saw I've been meaning to do it for ages, finally got around to it last year, went to watch, the stage version where they had a live orchestra. Yeah. So it was great hearing all the songs live. But maybe it's just because of my memory, but it sort of lost something because it felt like it was almost played for laughs. Like it was a bit, it was like cheesy, big, larger than life. They had this, prop Martian walking machine that had the big green eyes, but and it just looked silly rather than scary. It had CGI that was, again, quite silly rather than scary. And they even had things that weren't in the sort of album version, where there was a character who was just called the Voice of Humanity, and he was like this big, quite stocky guy with like really long blonde hair and like a beard, and he was really going for it, and it was almost like something from Nickelback or whatever. Like it was just dead, really corny. So somehow the live version, and maybe this is the reality of it, but it didn't reflect what I thought of as this like serious horror, scary piece of fiction that I remembered from when I was young.
I suppose that, and that's kind of the problem that I have, is that I didn't listen to it when I was young, and I was a little bit older, so I never got that from it. So perhaps that the sort of live show is kind of maybe how I would have adapted it from after I heard it for the first time. And that's not to say, I don't appreciate it, but I kind of think it's very of its time. It sounds like a 1970s prog rock
album. Musically, it is dated, isn't it?
It very, and it. I don't know if you heard of Rush, the 2112 concept album they did, which was a couple of years before that. And it was, again, it's sort of like set in the future, and it's like the whole album is basically this kind of story about this civilization that discovers, I don't know, it could even be like a magic guitar or something, but it really reminds me of that. You should listen to it, actually. It's a fun listen. It was on Hero game a few years ago. But yeah, so it kind of reminds me of that. So yeah, I just don't feel like it's aged that well.
Particularly well.
I think it's one of those things where you heard it when you were younger and it kind of frightened you, but you know, it was also quite exhilarating. And I just still feel like if you don't listen to it, and that's in those circumstances when it came out or when you were young, then perhaps you just don't get that from it. I don't know.
Well, we'll dive into a quick summary of the story, and I'll try and explain certainly the elements, or the one element that, or the sort of pinnacle of the horror bit for me.
Yeah.
It starts with, you know, literally things seen in the sky. People are witnessing these ejaculations, for want of a better phrase, from Mars, sort of green flame that's being sort of belched out, and people are speculating on, you know, what the hell's this? And then I love, it's almost got parallels again with what we're experiencing now. They're landing on Earth, on Horsell Common, which is right near where I used to work in Woking. And there's like a statue of a Martian fighting machine near Horsell Common, which that's cool, isn't it? So it's almost like they've kind of claimed HG Wells. I don't know if he's from there or not, but they've claimed it anyway, which is a nice little touristy
thing. Yeah, that's a nice
touch, So there's this big crater in Horsell Common with a big cylinder, like a burning metal cylinder. And people, I think, can even hear like a hammering sound from inside it, or like knocking. And someone tries to approach it, but then it's too hot and they have to back away. So in the end, it's almost like people just sort of leave it there for a bit and life kind of goes on as normal. And he talks about like the shunting of the trains and the quiet sounds. Mm. And it's just like, oh yeah, there's this thing landed. Then the lid starts to unscrew. And there's a track where it's like, it plays this like sinister, like bassy tune. And it's got this sound effect of like the unscrewing lid of the cylinder. And it almost, I don't know, it sounds almost like breathing in a way. It's like, and that sound effect and this like tension of like, oh, what's going to come out? What's going to come out? And everyone's gathered around watching it. I remember just being really, really scared by that bit and that piece of music. I remember it really fondly. And then finally, the top, you know, clangs off, drops to the floor with a clang, and people have, you know, no idea what's going to emerge. And then you get this, you know, glistening bulk just heaves itself out of the cylinder. This is, you know, very much a kind of Lovecraftian type image. And at that point, I think, is when you first see that they've got this thing, the heat ray.
Yeah.
People, it sort of blasts everyone with this, you know, gun, I guess, for want of a better phrase, that sort of torches them all and kills people. So everyone runs away screaming and panicking. And then again, you're back to the creature is then just hammering things together in this pit, these ominous kind of clanking sounds.
Yeah.
And life just carries on as normal because no one really knows what to do about it. So everyone just gets on with it and goes to work. It's weird, isn't it?
Very weird, yeah.
And then the first kind of major bit of peril, I guess, that pushes the narrative forward is emerging from this pit, you know, constructed by this disgusting alien blob with all his Meccano set that he's presumably brought with him, is this big, I think the artilleryman describes it to our kind of narrator, and he's like, massive metal things on legs, giant machines that walked, picking up men and bashing them against trees. And I was like, oh man, that's really scary. Like, it's that thing about technology that surpasses our own being used against us. Yeah. That is scary to me.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. I think it's like anything, isn't it? If you really kind of absorb it and use your imagination, then, yeah, it does become frightening.
Sorry, for anyone listening, we had a little technical glitch there, which we tried to seamlessly cover up, but completely failed visually. So, yes, we'll soldier on through. We'll soldier on through, a bit like the soldiers who fight against the Martians.
Absolutely,
the,
yeah.
These segue.
Little bastards.
With their heat rays. And they make that noise, don't they, that you touched on it earlier, that in the musical they've gone for this like weird kind of Oola, instead of a weirdo from Wigan saying it, it sounds like a scary Martian. Do you want to have a go at an oola?
Oola.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good, actually. I am scared.
You should be, mate.
I am. I was kind of wondering if you were going to like break down into another coughing fit at the end. Then that would have been scary.
I did cough then. Yeah, I did cough.
You did, you know, into your arm and then following all the guidance, of course.
Absolutely.
So that basically sets us up for this, you know, London gets wiped out, loads of people are dead, there's fighting machines trampling along the Thames, wading through the water, which is a cool image. People are trying to flee on, there's that ship, isn't there? Is it called the Thunder Child? And it's got that's like the pinnacle of the cheesy songs. It's like, Farewell Thunderchild!
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But it just gets, it's like a military warship that just gets trashed. I think it manages to bring down like one fighting machine, just gets melted. And I think if I remember rightly, the narrator loses he's trying to get to his missus. I can't remember where she is or whatever, but they're apart. In effect, is her name Carrie? I think it's Carrie, but it's got that like it's got that sad song. I think it's called Forever Autumn. It's quite sweet.
Yeah,
you know, it's a lot of variety. A lot of variety.
Yeah, yeah. You've got something for everyone.
And then that's kind of the first side, really. It's like Martians arrive. Everyone's fucked. London's a desolate wasteland. Most people are either dead or have fled the city. The Martians themselves seem to have moved on to more conquering, you know, further afield. So we're left with our narrator stuck, trapped in this sort of dystopian, dead London. And that's the setting for the second half, which opens with he's traipsing through the red weed.
The red weed,
It's such a good idea. So it's like, oh, that's why Mars is red. Because the things that live there, have, for whatever reason, they bring this kind of horrible, disgusting, organic-looking plant life with them that grows and takes over everything. And I think there was maybe even, you know, sometimes albums come with those like art books, especially old vinyl ones from the 70s. And I remember there being this, like an image someone had drawn of like London all overgrown with this red, disgusting, organic stuff that looked like kind of veins and being really freaked out by that.
Yeah, yeah.
And a bit like, link to Lovecraft again, it's a bit like that, his story, The Colour Out of Space, that was made into that recent Nicolas Cage adaptation, which is ace, by the way.
Oh, you enjoyed it? You enjoyed it?
I did. It's one of those films that, you know when you watch a film and you're like, oh, that was good, you know, and then afterwards you kind of think about it more and it gets better in your own head?
Yeah.
Somehow? It was definitely a weird, like, a lot of the decisions they made in what order to put the scenes in were odd, but it definitely had that thing of the horror of unknown weird shit that's growing and taking over what we would think of as normal plant life and normal life.
Is that on streaming services now that the cinemas have closed?
Great question. Don't know. It was the last thing, I saw it a couple of weeks ago and it was almost like just when the social distancing was coming in, but you were still allowed to go to the cinema, and so we went. And then, there's no way you could watch it now. But hopefully, they've made it available on the streaming services. I don't know. I saw The Invisible Man you can get.
Yeah, it's full price though, isn't it? You have to. It's like the same price as a cinema ticket, essentially, which is fair enough. But it just puts me off renting it.
Yeah, it's a funny
like
one. That.
15 quid.
It's an interesting one,
which I do get, but
because it's a bit like I understand why it needs to be full price to keep them going, but at the same time I'm not in a cinema, so why would I pay? It's a funny little moral quandary. It's a great time to watch. There's loads of like movies and stuff to I've watched Snowpiercer last night, enjoyed that was, you know, the bloke who did Parasite.
What's that? That's on Amazon, isn't it? Is it on Amazon?
It's Amazon Prime. It's free.
I might watch that then. Worth a watch.
I'm not saying it's perfect. There were things I would criticise about it, but really enjoyable, bonkers. The second half in particular is really unpredictable. So, yeah, overall, I'm like, 4 stars, worth a watch, definitely.
I'll check it out.
And I'll tell you what else is worth a watch, by which I mean a listen, the second half
War
of
the
World.
Worlds.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah, you guessed. Well guessed. So he has some interesting encounters in the second half. It's basically just a series of people he bumps into while knocking about.
Yeah.
We get that cool imagery of the red weed. He meets this guy. It's a couple, actually, isn't it? Beth and Nathaniel, I think they are, the parson.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And she's trying to persuade him, you know, to keep going and keep fighting and life's worth living. Whereas he becomes kind of, he's viewing this apocalypse and this invasion as like a Christian kind of,
exactly,
in a religious way. Yeah, it's like devil, what's the word I'm looking for? Judgment has been brought down upon us.
Yeah.
So he's sort of, oh, it's mankind's fault, it's our fault, we deserve this, that kind of thing. And then in the end, I think, we see Beth actually get taken by one of the patrolling kind of Martian machines. And by this point, I think it's implied or explicitly stated that they're like picking people up and draining their blood and chucking them into baskets on their back.
Which
is
very dark, isn't it? Yeah, very dark.
Yeah, especially when you think about, like, it's never explained what the red weed is. So is there something going on with recycling human organic material into this weed? And it just, like, yeah, real nefarious, unpleasant sort of intentions, really.
Could be their shit.
It could be. Suppose if all you ate was blood, human blood, you probably would shit red.
I bring a lot to this podcast.
I think that is a solid fan theory, and you will receive a lot of credit for that when this
Thank
is broadcast.
You.
Martian shit, watch out for it. Does that mean that the Venusians have green shit?
Definitely. Of course it does. Science, isn't it?
But Earth, I don't have blue and green shit, though.
Blue and green?
You know, for Earth, we live on Earth, don't we? It's blue and green.
Earth, the colour of Earth is brown.
It is. This is, my mind is, I think you're onto something here.
And you eat a lot of dirt.
I eat a lot of Marmite, actually.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a link. We'll perhaps come back.
Is this the worst episode of Dark Matter ever? You better believe it.
I think we're just adjusting to a new reality,
we are adjusting,
aren't we?
Yeah.
Everyone's mind is a bit.
Normally, I've
affected.
Got you here to look to kind of, you know, am I on the right track with something? I've got no filter, basically. I'm just saying whatever comes into my head,
and I like it. And we haven't even done a video thing, have we? So I can't even see you. I don't even know what
we should
you look
do
like.
That. Yeah.
For all I know, you might have grown...
I've got a beard now.
Have you grown your hair?
Yeah.
So you've got long hair and a beard?
Yeah, yeah.
Go on, describe yourself for the listeners.
And I'm like really sort of stocky guy, long blonde hair, beard.
Hang on a minute. Is this the voice of humanity?
I am the voice of humanity.
Means you have to put that voice on for the rest of the episode, though. Honestly, it was an impressive spectacle by him. He was like, maybe he does speak like that in real life. You meet him, you're like, hello, mate. And he's like, hello! Well, maybe not. So anyway, he meets the artilleryman who he first encountered early on when the guy was, you know, dejected because they'd all been wiped out and he'd had to do a runner from Horsall Common. And now he's got this big plan and he's like, I'm going to rebuild the world and we're going to build a new life underground and we're going to have schools and banks and we're going to, you know, capture a fighting machine and build our own and then finally we'll rise up and reclaim the earth. And I'll be honest, I was quite impressed with his idea. I thought it was good on him. The narrator's just plonking about, moaning. At least he's trying to do something.
Yeah, the narrator's a miserable git, isn't he?
He's just a boring bastard. Yeah, he's sort of moping around. He's like, oh, my missus has gone, but I can't really be bothered to do anything. And then he sort of slags off the artilleryman because he's made a start digging this tunnel, but he's not done very much and it's a bit crap. And he's like, oh,
man.
Yeah, it's like, I knew I had to leave behind this strange dreamer. And it's, or you could help him.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then, and then you'd be like the top dog in the new society as well. You'd be in there on the ground floor. this is what I'm hoping arises from coronavirus, is like a new social order where I become worthwhile and important. Do you think that might happen?
You already are, buddy.
Ah, that was very sweet.
You talk a lot of shit.
I just braced myself for the old 1-2.
But you are important.
It's important shit. It's important. Absolutely. Useless shit. So he's left behind. I forgot to mention the parson does die, because I think the narrator knocks him out to keep his gob shut. And that's where you get like a long tentacle snakes in to this ruined church that they're hiding in, and snags him and drags him away.
Snag him.
And that, I think, is where they got the idea for the roving sort of camera that they use in the old movie, and also appears in the Tom Cruise movie too, which
that's
is
right,
quite,
does, yeah.
quite a cool image, like a big scary robot eyeball thing on a slithering metal. Parson's gone, artilleryman, he's binned him off. And then he basically just decides to commit suicide, doesn't he? He's like, I'm going to give myself to the Martians. Well, how is your plan better than the artilleryman's plan?
Exactly,
then?
Yeah. At least he's trying.
Yeah. So, you heard it here first, folks. The main character in War of the Worlds is a dick. So he marches out in full view of the fighting machine, you know, kill me. And that's when he realises that they're all still silent. They're being pecked at by buzzards. There's Martian entrails hanging out of them. And I'm not quite sure how he pieces this together, but it transpires that despite the failure of our governments, our military, our weapons, our technology, the thing that has killed the Martians is that they were completely unprotected against our bacteria and our diseases. Yeah. And they didn't have the necessary immunity. So, to be honest, coronavirus is basically the hero of this musical.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought? And that's it. That's the end. It, you know, we get a final bit of a musical flourish. There's like a little coda where it's like a space mission, like a modern-day NASA space mission, but then they bump into a Martian. And that's a bit lame and stupid.
Yeah.
Because it's like they don't know what's going on, but it's like, well, no, if in this version of reality it already happened in 1898, then you would know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So that bit always annoyed me. But in the on-stage version, they at least had a nice special effect where something explodes.
Okay.
Which made up for it. That was quite cool.
But, it's a fun tale. Not fun, but you know what I mean. It's a novel way of presenting quite a dark tale.
Yeah, I think they... I mean, I accept a lot of the songs are kind of cheesy and dated.
Yeah.
And it is, certainly the stage version is really played almost as a kind of, not quite a parody, but what's the word I'm looking, melodrama. It had like Jason Donovan playing the parson when we saw it. It was pretty good. He did a good job, to be honest. He was ace. Best thing in it. But I still think that original record, maybe he had to be at the right age, maybe, I don't know. But it captured that kind of the darkness of the story and all that horrible stuff about the extracted blood and the mask, that squelchy Martian in the pit hammering together its fighting machine.
Yeah.
What's your favourite
track?
Oh, well, so I'll probably have already spliced it in by now, but it is definitely that one that plays when there's the Horsell Common, that first revelation in the heat ray. It's got this bit where it kind of builds up and so it starts off and it's like, wow, 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 a bass driven and then a damn, wow, wow, wow. It's great. I might cut that rendition out though. But yeah, ace. Love that. What about you?
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that actually. It's definitely... I think the first song kind of always reminds me of, do you know The Simpsons? The episode where Lionel Hutz does the Planet of the Apes musical?
Yeah, it's that with Dr. Zaius,
I don't know why, but it always kind of reminds me, it's that same sort of tone.
Yeah.
But I think that one is definitely, sort of slightly darker and gets the imagination going a bit more.
I thought you were going to give us a rendition of "Oh No, Nathaniel."
No.
Oh, that's a shame. So that's it. That's basically my pitch. Then it's dead good. and scary when you're young.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, it's for that glistening, sweaty, blobby, horrible creature emerging for the first time and torching everyone with a heat ray near where I used to work. That bit for me is like a horror image that's kind of cemented forever in my soul.
No, I totally understand that. I think, certainly when you, things that scare you when you're younger, that obviously, wouldn't scare a grown adult, but that's the time, them's the times when the formative years, when fears play differently. I'm not on it today, mate. I'm not on it today at all.
Very insightful.
No, but I totally understand that. I get that. I used to have a ladybird book called Rumpelstiltskin that terrified me.
You have mentioned that. Yeah, you have mentioned that before, and I have still failed to seek it out, but it stuck with you, hasn't it? Clearly.
Yeah, so I fully respect the whole, you're a child, you hear something, you see something that maybe doesn't stand up years later, but it is don't get me wrong, it's an impressive album, and it is quite a terrifying tale. So does it deserve a place in the Hall of Pain? You bet your ass it does.
Phew.
You bet your ass. It's there, mate. It's there. And they need a bit of music down there.
They do. Yeah, this is our first. We're trying to be as multimedia as possible on this show, and this is our first album to send down into the.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Disgusting depths for Stephen King and Salad Fingers to listen to together.
Yeah.
And Thingy from Creep as well.
Yeah, they'll have a whale of a time. So
Tim Lovejoy.
Yeah.
Can't remember who else. Michael Myers. So yeah, enjoy. This one's on us, lads. Enjoy. Hey, have we got any female residents of the Hall of Pain?
Don't think we have.
I suppose the we have by virtue of some of the collectives, like the whole Blair Witch Project. Yeah, Blair Witch, there you go. She's in.
Yeah, Blair Witch, yeah.
We're okay. We're not complete dinosaur scumbags. That's a relief.
Maybe we need to do some more, though.
Let's ponder that. It's your go next, isn't it? So let's see what you come up with. And I have no idea we've kind of exhausted our little shortlist, haven't we? So I'm intrigued to find out.
I've got some ideas, boy. I've got some ideas. Let's just say...
No, go on. Do us a clue.
Let's just say if you follow the Yellow Brick Road...
That could be one of at least two things, actually, that are pretty creepy. So, yeah.
There you go.
Trying to think of a pun that has the word Oz in it. Oz Clark. You look a bit like Oz Clark, I suppose. That's
do
fun.
I? Okay.
Well, he's bald.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you've grown your hair. Sorry, we've clarified that.
Grown my beard. Getting a neck tattoo. Like Cody Rhodes.
Like Cody Rhodes. Yeah. That's good. Great minds. Saying, what's it going to say? Nightmare Family.
Something like that, yeah. Dark Natter or Dark Natter?
You're going to get a Dark Natter neck tattoo. Done. If you do, hang on. We can't go to a tattooist. Self, you're going to do it yourself?
I'll do it myself. Do it myself.
Right now, live on air to end the show. Is that the noise? Is that the noise that tattoos make? Bzzz.
Yeah, but when you do them yourself, different, innit?
I'll give it a go. I'll let you know.
It's like a searing hot pain. So apologies, listeners, for my absolute failure to bring anything to this podcast this week. I'm not well.
I mean, tune in a couple of weeks' time if you didn't need... Cliffhangers are important. It's always important to end on a cliffhanger ending. Tune in a couple of weeks to find out if Liam is... No, that's wrong. Hey. At what point does joking about your friend's death become too far?
We're yet to hit that point. So
yeah,
don't worry.
You're right. I don't really wish for your death.
You son of a bitch.
And on that note, I'll speak to you soon. He's gone.
Take care, everyone. No, I'm back. Take care, everyone. You just cut out. Take care. Stay indoors, wash your hands.
Yep. Don't go near anybody. Flatten the curve.
Yeah.
And we'll speak to you soon.
Take care, guys.
Thank you for listening, everybody, to another edition of Dark Natter. If you enjoyed the show and want to support us, you can do so by leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast listening thingy, or even better, by telling your friends, family and fellow dark fiction enthusiasts all about us. Please also follow us on social media, where you'll find us on Instagram at Dark Natter Podcast, or on Twitter at @dark_natter. I'm also going to briefly plug my new book, my fifth novel and first in the cyberpunk genre, London 2039 Auxiliary, is now available for pre-order on Amazon. You can get your hands or your retractable illegal claw implants on a copy for either your e-reader device or in paperback, whichever you prefer. If you're a fan of Blade Runner, Altered Carbon, or just good old-fashioned detective stories set in disturbingly plausible near-future dystopian settings, then I promise it will be right up your dark, sinister alley. With that, I will leave you all in peace to look after yourselves and stay safe until next time.
Yeah, it's amazing, really, isn't it? Because you're dealing with absolute fucking bollocks. I forgot what I was going to say. Just cut this bit. No, go on, carry on.
I agree.